Coming up on today's Next Fan Up podcast, it's family fun vacation time in the NFL.
You know, sometimes then dad comes home for 2 months and they're like, get out of here.
I mean, check out this news in Buffalo.
And I'm going to say to you right now what everybody in Buffalo always says regarding him. Did you know he's Jack Nicklaus's nephew?
And we have this news in Jacksonville.
Fun fact, with Antonio Cromartie getting his current wife pregnant with twins, Cromartie now has more children, either here or on the way, than Blake Bortles has wins in his NFL career.
Oh, all right. Well, maybe it's not family fun at all, but it's football, and we're talking about it now.
Hello? We go out, we hit people in the mouth.
You play to win the game.
Next Fan Up.
I want winners.
Featuring Pod Vader and the Superfans.
But they are who we thought they were.
Hello and welcome to the It's Just Me and You Kid edition of the Next Fan Up podcast. Hello, everybody. I'm Pod Vader, and I'm here with merely one superfan. That is our Bills superfan, Rob. Hello, Rob.
What's going on, Pod? I'm looking forward to this fun-packed pod, just you and me.
It's not quite just you and me. I did do an interview with Matt Williamson, our scout in residence, and talked about the life of the scout. I think you're going to get a lot of good stuff out of that one. He literally walks us through the year of the scout, starting with right now. What are the scouts doing right now? Right through the entire year, telling us exactly what the NFL scout is doing throughout the entire calendar year. It's quite an interesting conversation. I learned a few things about the life of a scout. One of them is I don't ever want to be an NFL scout. You have any desires to be a scout in the NFL, Rob?
You know what? I did. I used to. That's actually what I wanted to do when I was younger and silly. But it's a grind. It's a grind. And, you know, for a majority of it, you're not really making any money. So it's definitely a, you know, one big passion project for you. If it's something that, you know, you were to get into, you know, and very few see the payoff of getting, you know, the higher end jobs of it. So I don't know. I don't think I could do it to myself.
It's a tough life. And certainly if you already have a family, you might as well just forget about it now, kid. It ain't going to happen because I know my wife would never put up with some of the things that M-Dub says scouts do. So pay attention to that and get ready for that. Before we get into all of that, though, I'm going to hit a couple of big news items. And the biggest one happened today. There was a trade. Yeah, the New York Jets traded their former first-round pick, Calvin Pryor, to the team that seems to want to do trades, that is the Cleveland Browns. And the Browns sent DeMario Davis back to the New York Jets. Davis was a starter there from 2013 to 2015. An interesting player-for-player trade. These don't happen often, Rob.
No, they don't. I was excited when I saw it this morning because, you know, rarely do we get to see something like this. And I think for both players, they're kind of jumping into better situations for themselves. Calvin Pryor obviously fell out of favor in New York. I don't even think he was going to make the team. So they're able to move him to Cleveland. Cleveland safeties are horrific. Oh, man. Might be the worst position of any team in the NFL. So he's going to play. I mean, he's going to play. He's going to get a lot of opportunity to play. And I think going the other way, Cleveland, I like what they did. One for the upgrade, even though Calvin Pryor might not be that good. DeMario Davis, I think, set to make $4.8 million, so they just lose the $1 million cap, the dead money hit on him. So savvy move money-wise, although Cleveland doesn't really need to necessarily save money. DeMario Davis, definitely going to play in New York, you know, at that linebacker spot. Lots of position, lots of time available for a mediocre, halfway decent player. So I think it's good for both teams. Kind of Calvin Pryor needs a change of scenery, so we'll see how it goes.
I mean, the Browns do take a hit at their depth in the linebacker core, but they still have Jamie Collins and Chris Kirksey in that position, so it's not that bad. Honestly, if you've got two linebackers, you're probably playing in a sub package for most of the time anyway. Calvin Pryor, as you mentioned, does become an upgrade for them. And DeMario Davis goes back to a team that, you know, honestly could use him. I'm going to be on record as saying that I think the Jets are probably in the lead for with the first pick in the NFL draft.
They might be. Yeah, Kirksey, by the way, just signed a nice new deal with Cleveland.
I mean, Cleveland is definitely a team to watch. They're not going to be a team to watch this year, but they are a team to keep an eye on. Speaking of Cleveland, we might as well just stay there for a moment because Hugh Jackson, after OTA practice on Wednesday, said, you know, that Brock Osweiler guy, he's kind of a surprise. He's not at all what I thought he was going to be. This is an interesting comment coming from the head coach of a team with a bunch of quarterbacks that don't exactly get me excited.
Yeah, I chalk this one up to kind of off-season. Our other super fan, Neil, has the off-season chatter bingo board. I feel like this kind of falls under that. It's a player that they probably want to get rid of in some form or fashion, maybe trying to drum up a touch of trade interest. I mean, we'll see. I still think, no matter what he's saying, that the young kid Kessler from USC is going to end up being the starter this year.
Yeah, I think the hate has gone a little too far on Brock Osweiler. And yeah, I'm looking at his ranking in total QBR, and it's not very good. It's what not getting better looks like. But I mean, he is a top 32 quarterback according to last year's rankings. He's actually a top 25 quarterback according to last year's rankings. And of course, yes, there are only 32 teams. He is ranked number 23 out of all the quarterbacks last year. But I mean, even just looking at his raw stats, I mean, he doesn't play a lot of games in his first 3 years in Denver. That last season of Peyton Manning, he comes in and starts 7 games. He goes 5-2, but he had 10 touchdowns to 6 interceptions. Last season, he had 15 touchdowns to 16 interceptions. And his passer completion went down by about 2 or 3 points, depending on how you want to round the percentages. I just think if you put Brock Osweiler in that offense again one more year, I think he would improve. I don't think he's going to regress much more. I think he's hit his floor.
Yeah, I agree. I think the hate did go a little too far, you know, obviously having a lot to do with that beautiful contract he signed, you know, the previous year. But I think, you know, he is what he is. I think he's a, you know, lower end starter, higher end backup, but he's young enough that he does still have at least a little bit of upside. And, you know, it's the NFL. You never know. You're the right guy in the right system. And, you have a couple nice weapons with you. You can do all right.
The problem is that doesn't exist in Cleveland. Hey, we're going to whip around the NFL, but before we do, why don't we get to that much hyped up interview I did with Matt Williamson? What do you say?
Let's do it.
And it's my pleasure now to bring in our very special guest. He is the former Cleveland Browns scout and the man who hosts a million other podcasts. It is Matt Williamson. Hello, Matt Williamson.
Hello, Pod Vader. How are you? Long time no chat.
It has been a while. You know, this time last year, we had you and Matt Chatham on to talk about the greatest running backs of all time as our off-season filler. That was good stuff. We didn't do anything like that this year. Our super fans have been creative, though, slaughtering sacred cows a couple weeks ago. And this week, you know, defending the butt of all jokes. So it's quite interesting. Giving some love to the unloved, I think, was the way that they titled it. But for you, I thought this was a perfect opportunity to sort of go through the life of a scout. Like, what does the scout do at each point of the season?
Okay.
And since I was like, who do I know who's lived this life? Oh, Matt Williamson. I was like, let's give Matt a call and sort of walk through that. So right now, I mean, we were discussing this off air. This is the dead period of the NFL and where most everybody goes on vacation. And I'm assuming the scouts get to go on vacation this month as well.
Yes. Well, let's preface this by saying it's been, 13 years, I think, since I did that, since I was in the NFL with the Browns. And it was only 1 year, and I had a kind of an odd scouting gig where generally you're a pro scout or you're a college scout. And I was a combination of the two. So I was aware of what the, the pure pro guys were doing and what the pure college guys were doing. But my life was a little different where, if I wasn't doing college, I could always do pro. Like, for example, I was in charge of the entire NFC West at the time, where I had to have a grade on every player in the West. And I also had like 25 colleges I was, I went into and was in charge of as well, or cross checked and that kind of thing. But yes, I mean, basically, the NFL basically shuts down. Not now. I mean, this is OTA season. But basically, the NFL shuts down after OTAs and before training camp. There's about a 3 week or a month stretch there that anyone football related is basically on vacation or at the beach or at Disney World or whatever. And I always love telling this story. Walt Harris was the head coach at Pitt when I was there. And about 9 months or 10 months before that dead period of football, he would tell all of us on staff, "Hey, now's the time to get your wife pregnant." And I remember the first year, I'm like, "What the hell is he talking about?" And basically he was saying, "I don't want you having kids in week three of the season. Have it during the dead period. Try to time it up so if you're planning on having babies, that you do it during this dead time." Which is, how serious people take this stuff. And it makes some sense. But yeah, there is a dead period coming up. Now's the time for mini camps. And I would say scouts often are, not often, but I would say probably the scouts that are not in the building. We'll mostly talk about college scouts who live in their area mostly. If you're in charge of the SEC, you might live in Georgia or whatever, Alabama, wherever your home is. You don't live in the town of your club, but you come in probably for a mini camp or two. There aren't many times that the scouts are actually in the building, so you come in and you see the guys. You see the guys that you just stood on the table for to draft. And also a big thing this time of year, too, is getting ahead. You're watching last year's tape on college players that before you get into, before you even go into the school and they play their final year of school. And you also have things like Blesto meetings or national meetings. Do you think the fans know what those are, or should I explain?
No, explain those.
Okay. Entry-level scouts often get assigned Blesto duties. There's two big companies out there. There's National and there's Blesto. And what they do is basically they're a year ahead of everyone. So like when they're going through to Nebraska, they're getting heights and weights of the guys coming out a year from now. So they'll present to teams this time of year, these are the guys that I looked at Nebraska. These are my early grades on them. And the biggest purpose of them is you get strong heights and weights, that type of thing. You get a list. I mean, people have often asked me, how do these scouts create their list? So they watch every dude in, that's eligible, and you're supposed to, but not really. basically they tell you this center is going to be somebody you're going to look at, this receiver. So basically Blesto and National are like the first layer of defense. They do kind of the dirty work that don't bother watching, don't spend any time on this running back. He's got no chance. And if he has a great senior year, you bring him back up. It doesn't mean he's dead. But Blesto was created. It actually was based out of Pittsburgh, and it was created by the Bears, Lions, Eagles, Steelers, Texans. I guess it was the Kansas City Texans at the time, or the Houston Texans at the time, before they came to the Chiefs, Oilers. So Blesto, I think I'm getting the teams right. I know the first five teams I was right. So those five came up with the idea of, hey, let's all throw a scout together. We'll combine information, and, the Bears guy will handle the Midwest. The Lions guy will handle the, they'll all divide up, and okay, we'll share notes on these guys a year before we really start scouting them. And then there's a big meeting, where the Blesto scouts present these players to, the GMs and scouts out there.
Okay. So you go through the meetings, you go on vacation,
mini camp opens up at the end of July. Where are the scouts at that point?
You mean training camp?
Training camp, right.
Yes. A big thing that people don't realize that scouts do during the preseason, you know, which is obviously a little bit before, getting ahead of myself a little bit, was like when I was with the Browns, they would send me to Panthers, Lions, you know, whatever. I mean, some preseason game. And I wouldn't be scouting Calvin Johnson. You know, they'd give me a list of, here's 10 dudes on the roster that could get cut or on the bubble type guys. Do you think, get grades on them and maybe we'll pick them up. And in our case with the Browns, we needed everything. You know, maybe this guard that gets cut by the Lions is better than our 53rd guy. So every weekend in the preseason, the scouts, including the college scouts, are at pro games, you know, watching the bottom end of the roster dudes. They also spend some time. It's another time that they come to the facility and they'll be one thing we did was we each had a position. Like I remember I was in charge of the tight ends and, you know, our West Coast scout was in charge of our offensive linemen and we gave grades to our team, you know, so in a way that's good because you have a feel, you're on the road so much that you have a feel for this is what we have at the position. This is what an NFL lineman looks like. And, you know, you would spend the whole camp or a big portion of camp concentrating on a position group and then watching the tape after the practice and saying, you know, and you'd have your 2 cents of, boy, I think they should keep this tight end instead of this tight end or, you know, that type of deal. So it was an extra set of eyes on your own players. And then you go on the road to, you know, evaluate other NFL players to maybe pick up.
That's interesting. So how does this new rule, the new cutdown rule, do you think that's going to have an adverse effect on stuff like this, where those bottom guys aren't going to be necessarily be able to pick up until the end of the preseason, whereas before they had a chance to make it with another team, you know, maybe midway through the preseason?
Maybe. I guess it would become a little harder because you go to that final preseason game or two and you're not sure who they're going to cut or not. You know what I mean? Like there'd be more people you have to watch as a scout, you know, thinking, man, they still have all these guys as opposed to, boy, one of these two running backs is going to make the team. The other one isn't. You know what I mean? Like one of these four running backs is going to make the team and the other three aren't. So I guess you'd have less information to work off of, but still, even the worst of teams, you know, like the Browns when I was there, we weren't picking many guys up from the first set of cuts anyways. You know, I mean, generally speaking, the coaches and staff don't have a difficult time making those first wave of cuts. You know who can't play. And other teams aren't grabbing them.
Okay. So the college football season starts at the end of August. Obviously, the regular season for the NFL kicks off that first week of September or right thereafter, basically right after Labor Day. Where are the scouts now?
Now you're in full college mode. You know, I mean, the pro guys are in the building. The pro guys are breaking down tape. Like I said, I had the NFC West. I'm watching every snap of NFC West tape, including special teams. The college guys disappear. You don't see them anymore, basically until the first wave of draft meetings before the combine, where you kind of come in from the road. And basically what these guys do then, and I think that the usual routine is you go out on the road for an entire week, you watch games that weekend, you stay out that following week, then you come home for a weekend. It's almost like, what, like 12 days on, 2 days home. So you're really not home. You're only home like maybe 4 or 5 days in a month if you're a college scout. You know, you're basically going from, and I always felt for those West Coast guys. I mean, when I did it, I did things that were in the Ohio, PA, Maryland, East Coast border where, you know, you drive from West Virginia to Pitt to Penn State to, you know, Temple. You get your layout there. But those West Coast guys, the schools are so far apart. I mean, that's a grind. I bet that's got to be brutal. I mean, do you fly? Do you drive? Basically, our rule was, and you could do whatever you wanted, but this is kind of like a rule of thumb. If it was 6 hours or less we drove, if it was more than that, you flew. I always preferred to drive. You could just pack more crap and, you know, you could just, you know, live out of your car as opposed to sitting at gates and all those things. But basically what you do is you get up in a hotel room, you go to the school, you meet and talk to as many people as you possibly can. And every school has a liaison, you know, like when I was at the director of football ops at Akron, I was also the scouting liaison. Like I helped put the pro day together. When the scouts came in, I set them up and I answered their questions. So every college has one of those. And it's generally the director of football ops type guy. But anyways, a scout comes to, you know, Akron or Ohio State or whatever, and basically watches tape and talks to as many people until practice. And then you go out to practice, watch practice. Of course, you're taking notes every bit of the way. And generally, practice ends. You put all your notes away, hop in the car and drive to University of Cincinnati or wherever. Check into a hotel, type up all your notes on those players, sleep, rinse, repeat. You know what I mean? Like it's really Groundhog Day. And you can understand it's a lonely life. It's a lot of travel. It's hard to stay in good shape. It's hard to, you know, get things, you know, you kind of live in a crazy world. And a lot of those scouts, even though they're from different teams, you know, the Jets and Dolphins scouts aren't supposed to like each other, but they all see each other at the same colleges and they're saying, and they become friends too. So you can see why some might compare notes or, hey, let's get dinner. And then, you know, I'll see you in Boston College in 2 days or whatever, you know. And a big thing that they do that takes a lot of time, and I think they're probably doing a lot of that this time of year too, is laying out their schedule for the year. Like, I'm going to go to this school and then this school. Like, for example, Penn State was only open for 1 week the year that I was there. Like, they wouldn't allow scouts in their building. That was a big Paterno thing, which I always thought was stupid, and it didn't help his players at all. But there was only 1 week of the year scouts could be there. So you had to rework your schedule totally around JOPA.
Okay. So we've made it to the playoffs at this point.
Bowl games and, you know.
Bowl games, playoffs. Yeah. So where are we at with the scouts now?
I mean, at that point, you have a pretty good, you're not turning in your reports, but you have a pretty good feel for who you like, who you don't. It's still, you're coming up on, you know, the season when, you know, nowadays draft Twitter's all over the draft and, you know, you got your workouts, you got your all-star games, senior bowl circuit, pro days, combine. So I think how we did it was before all of that, we had all the scouts in and had like preliminary meetings. Like, you're not building a board, but you're like, okay, there's five really strong running backs, or this does not look like a really good defensive tackle class. And you read some basic reports, and then you go back and, you know, see how the numbers add up and the postseason and interviews and all those type of things too. So I think you kind of get in there after the season, bowl season, basically, and everyone in the room kind of gets familiar of what this class is going to look like. And then you do all the draft postseason stuff. And then you come back and you grind it out for meetings. And obviously free agency factors in there. But if you're a college scout, it really doesn't, but it does for the team. You know, there's that couple weeks of free agency madness. And, you know, if you're a pro scout, that's obviously your busiest time.
The East-West Shrine Game, those all-star games, how important are those for the scouts?
They are. I mean, I think the average fan might overrate them a little. I mean, in reality, I always sort of felt for the kids because, you know, you have 3 days of practice and you've never met any of these people and you don't know any of the verbiage of, you know, how things go and, you know, or the offense and the defense. And then the game, you've never really played next to this dude or you've never really thrown to this receiver. But I think it's important of how you conduct yourself. You know, are you getting better every day? How do you get along with teammates? What's your personality? Are you improving? Is this important to you? Certainly there's more weight on the small school guys, you know, the Youngstown State kid that now gets to play against, you know, some of the bigger competition. But still, there's not that many reps to really base things off of or to change your opinion of what you had from tape drastically.
So now we get to the combine. We obviously know the importance of the combine. And
medical is the number one thing with the combine. I mean, just in case people don't realize that. I mean, the 40s and all those things are great and they're important, but the doctors do the most important work there.
How about the pro guys between the playoffs and the combine? What are the pro guys doing at this point?
A lot of time. I mean, you're still scanning. There's still free agents. I mean, like as we speak right now, there's, you know, quite a few players that aren't signed that are going to play in the league this year. You know, the veteran linebacker that's just sitting out there. So you kind of have them on speed dial. The pro guys do start to get involved and the coaches start to get involved. As soon as the NFL season is over, like when the NFL season's over, then your running back coach starts watching the top 10 running backs, you know, in the college, you know, so they start to get involved once their NFL season is over. Obviously, if you're in the playoffs and Super Bowl and things, you get a little later jump from the coaches. And basically when free agency ends, then the pro scouts will often cross check things too. Like maybe you give a pro scout, not necessarily schools, but maybe you give them a position and why don't you give a grade on the top 20 offensive linemen, you know, and you rank them how you like them. And, you know, we already know the guys that are going to be, we already know the names. We have some preliminary grades on them. So the one thing you got to remember, like, for example, your Patriots signed Rex Burkhead, right?
Yep.
Well, they go to the database and they type in Burkhead and there's going to be, you know, like his Blesto and National grades, there's going to be an area scout. There's going to be a cross check. There's going to be an NFL grade from his Cincinnati days for every year. So, like, he's going to have all these reports chronological. You don't ever lose any of that data. You know, like, you'll be like, remember in his sophomore year in Nebraska, he had a knee. Let's make sure that's not a problem. Or, you know what I mean? So, all these reports get filed under this player time and time again, you know. So remember back in 2013, Johnny, the West Coast scout, didn't like this guy. What didn't he like about him? You know, I mean, so those things never go away. And if you're a scout, I mean, basically when you hit submit, those things are basically in stone, you know, like if you screw up, people will always see it forever. You know, like, man, that guy didn't like Brett Favre. What's wrong with him? You know?
Okay. So we're in free agency. We've passed the combine. Pro days are going on. I'm assuming the scouts are involved with the pro day visits.
Heavily. You're right. And I don't know what else to add to that, but yeah, they're heavily involved with that.
So then we get to the NFL draft. Where are the scouts for the draft? Are they in the war room? Are they near?
Well, there's a couple week process that you just grind in the war room, you know, like 12-hour days where you really set your board. And if you're an area scout, you read your final report to everybody in the room. And, you know, like if today's running back day, the running back coach is in there, the offensive coordinator's in there, the head coach is in there, all the scouting staff, GM, of course, probably a cap guy and some things like that, too. There's a medical section, of course. So you basically build your board of let's rank all of our running backs from one to whatever every day. And then at the end, you start to rank things horizontally. I mean, so do we like our top running back more than our top receiver? You know, you build a board vertically first, you know what I mean? Like columns of by position. And then you start ranking it against other positions. Who's more valuable, this third defensive tackle or this fourth, you know, wide receiver? And so some people that are kind of, you know, the GMs and those guys that are impartial have more say about that. And then everyone handles the draft differently. But I think the best way of doing it is when the draft rolls around, the Midwestern scout does not need to be in the room. I mean, he's certainly in the building. And if anybody has a question about one of his guys, he's readily available. But usually, I mean, the owner's there for round one. The head coach, the GM, and that's about it. I mean, like, there doesn't need to be a lot of people in that room just cluttering things up and being noisy. Just, you know, decision makers take it from here. And every team takes it differently. Like, from what I understand, your Patriots don't put a lot of stock in the scouts. I mean, the scouts are basically just data gatherers. You know, like, give Bill all the information. He'll figure things out. He doesn't care if you think he's good or bad. Just give me all the data. You know, like, where some put more stock in their scouts, and you know, everyone handles things a little differently.
I guess I skipped over spring football. I'm assuming the college guys are watching those spring football games.
Yes, yeah, yeah. I mean, they're definitely at spring practices. At Pitt, it was the blue gold game, you know, where they play the inner squad game. So yeah, they're involved in that too.
All right, cool. And then we're back.
They're basically back to here, yeah.
And we're back to here. So the NFL draft occurs, and OTAs are happening, and we start the process all over again.
Yeah, basically. And so the scouts have more time off than the coaches. Like, the coaches really only get about 3 weeks or so. I think the scouts get up to about 2 months, but their busy time is a grind. I mean, when you're on the road, you know, 12 days in a row or something, it wears on you.
I can only imagine. It's certainly not family friendly.
No, not at all. You know, and mom needs to get used to dad not being there. And, you know, sometimes then dad comes home for 2 months and they're like, get out of here. It kind of reminds me the house we used to live in. The dude that lived two doors down from us, it's very unrelated, but he was a riverboat captain, you know, on the Pittsburgh rivers. And he was like in charge of the tugboat that would push a bazillion barges up and down the river. Well, he would do 30 days on, 30 days off. Yeah. And he was like a big partier. And it was amazing. Like, when he would come home that first week, we were all happy to see Keith and everybody's partying on the front porches. And then as the month goes on and he has no job, everyone's ready for Keith to get back on the boat, and him and his wife are fighting. And by the end of the month, it was like World War III over there. And then he runs out and he's gone for a month, and the whole neighborhood's quiet. Then he comes home and we're all happy to see Keith again. You know, so it's kind of like that too. Like, it's almost like two different worlds when you're home and not.
Oh, that's awesome. M-Dub, where can people find you?
At Williamson NFL. That's the best way. I'm writing for a bunch of people. Always looking for more. I'm doing a bunch of podcasts, all those good things. But at Williamson NFL is the best way to keep in touch.
The Life of a Scout, Matt Williamson, thanks for joining us once again on the Next Fan Up podcast.
You got it.
All right, Rob. So there goes Matt Williamson. The life of a NFL scout does not sound like anything I want to do. 12 days on, 2 days at home, and then you're back on the road again for another 12 straight days during the season. That's not something my wife is going to allow me to do.
Yeah, my wife would not be a fan of that schedule at all. I mean, it's a grind. Getting up. I mean, you're going all day those 12 days too. It's not 9 to 5. It is, you know, all day long, and you're just home for a little bit, then right back at it.
So, Rob, we were originally going to go through and whip through all 32 teams and the headlines for all 32 teams, but when we actually started looking at the headlines, we realized there isn't enough stuff to do headlines on all 32 teams, Rob.
No, unfortunately, football in June is boring.
Yeah, there's not a lot going on. So we're going to present you with the best of the headlines for the rest of the NFL. And if your team is in there, fantastic. If your team's not, I really do apologize. It's their fault for not doing enough stuff during this period of time. What can I say? I will give you the choice on the Ravens story that we'll talk about. Ravens projected with the best shot to make the postseason amongst the non-playoff teams, or they are the biggest nightmare in fantasy football. Which story do you prefer to talk about?
Let's go with biggest nightmare in fantasy football, which I'm assuming means we're going to talk about their running backs.
Yes. The biggest additions for the Ravens were at running back with Danny Woodhead and backup quarterback Ryan Mallett. So as we look at their top offensive players, you're looking at Joe Flacco, Danny Woodhead, Mike Wallace, Dennis Pitta. Now, I think that there are other players on this Baltimore Ravens depth chart that will probably produce a little bit better than what those players that I just listed. And I will start with the running backs. Danny Woodhead's a great little player, little being the key word, and great when he's on the field. He hasn't been able to stay healthy much.
I think we're going in the same direction here because I am a huge fan of Kenneth Dixon. This will be his second year I think he's going to be a beast. He had he put up good numbers, especially towards the end of the year, in that offense that none of the running backs prior were really doing anything. He was definitely the best of the lot. I think he's suspended for the first four games, so you're going to see a lot of Danny Woodhead early. I think you'll see a little bit of Terrence West, but it'll be mostly Woodhead, if I had to guess. But I think as the season goes on, you're going to see Kenneth Dixon take more and more of that role again. I think by midseason, it'll just be him and Woodhead doing it, and I think it'll be about 70-30 Dixon.
When you look at the tight ends on this team, too, I mean, Dennis Pitta has been around for a while now, and it's not exactly like I think he's hit his ceiling.
They have a ton of tight ends. Like, they just have a lot of them. At some point, they drafted a couple years ago a kid named Max Williams. I think he played in Minnesota. I think he was a second-round pick. Is viewed as, like, a real good receiving tight end. He got into action last year. I think maybe his role expands a little bit. They have a lot of receptions they got to make up for with Steve Smith not being there anymore. So it's going to be interesting to see who those go to. I think there's going to be an uptick on Wallace. I'm a big Wallace fan. But I think that they may run two tight end sets more frequently. And I think that Max Williams is going to be the beneficiary. Although they have so many tight ends in Baltimore, you never know.
The guy that wasn't listed in that conversation was Brashad Perriman. I think this is going to be the sleeper candidate this year in fantasy drafts. I think he's the guy, not Mike Wallace, that's going to benefit if you're looking for someone from the Baltimore Ravens. But ultimately, I don't know if I trust any of these Ravens players.
I like Dixon. I actually have him on our next fan up Dynasty League. I'm a big fan of his. I think Wallace, was getting drafted, at least right now, according to ADP, somewhere in the 50s as far as wide receivers. I think he's much better than that. I think he'll be about a number 30, you know, that 25 to 35 range. Perriman's a good flyer, but he's also had a lot of injury problems. So I don't think it's just a slam dunk that he's going to come out and be successful. But I think he's just as good a lottery pick as anyone else towards the end of a draft. That if it works out for him and he's healthy, he does have a strong arm quarterback who can get him the ball deep.
All right, we're moving now to the Cincinnati Bengals, where I see that their biggest story right now is how much will their rookies, John Ross and Joe Mixon, see the field? And, you know, what's interesting to me with Joe Mixon, I get the excitement over this kid. Like, a lot of people said he would have been a first rounder if not for his off-field troubles, but they still have Jeremy Hill and Giovanni Bernard. Both these guys are quality running backs.
Yeah, they are, but Giovanni Bernard's coming off the ACL, and Hill has regressed each of the past 3 years. And sometimes that happens with bigger backs. Now, he will have weird stat lines where he'll have a bunch of carries for 2-3 yards and then randomly breaks one off for 50 or 60. But I think Mixon is better than both of the backs. I think Mixon, especially early in the year, if he gets his opportunities, he might be the bell cow. And I don't think he'll get, you know, like a 70% share because the other backs still have talent. But I think Mixon will be, by the end of the year, the best fantasy back of the three of them.
I think maybe by the end of the year, but I think early on, he'll have opportunities, but he's not going to get workhorse type opportunities. I think he's going to be splitting carries early on. And then it's going to be towards the end of the year where, the head coach that is on the hottest of hot seats will be trying to save his job in any way that he can.
I don't know. It'll be interesting. Their offensive line is not really good as well. So, I mean, I don't know how much you can expect from any of the backs because there's three of them. There's not a great offensive line. And, you know, in previous years, they've shown they prefer to, you know, kind of pass the ball a little bit, even if it's to their backs, as opposed to running it. And one thing Jeremy Hill will do is he's going to get those goal line carries, you know, for sure, unless he's injured. So that right there kind of limits, you know, the ceiling that anyone could really have in that offense.
All right, so we'll move now to the AFC South. You wanted to avoid O-line talk in Houston, but you're not going to avoid it now in Indianapolis, as the talk there is that there's continuity for the first time in Andrew Luck's career at the offensive line spot. Their current offensive line looks like this. Anthony Costanzo at left tackle, Jake Muhort at left guard, Ryan Kelly at center, right guard Joe Haig, and right tackle LaRaven Clark. So this is the same group that closed out 2016, except for Muhort, who missed the final three games with a knee injury. Kelly, Haig, and Clark were rookies last season. Looking at the number of combinations of O-linemen that the Colts have used in Andrew Luck's career, 2012, 16 combos, 2013, 18, 2014, 20, 2015, 17, and 2016, 18 combinations of offensive linemen through the season. That's not going to help your quarterback.
No, you draft a quarterback number one. You'd think it's supposed to be the savior of the franchise. You'd think at some point you make strides to try to protect them. It's nice to see that Indianapolis is finally deciding to do that.
To me, none of those names really stand out to me. You know, Ryan Kelly maybe and Anthony Costanzo,
Kelly's the guy for me.
The Colts still, I think, have some work to do on their offensive line if they're going to keep Andrew Luck healthy for the season. The Jacksonville Jaguars. All right, so here are my boyfriends. The Football Power Index rankings have come out from the ESPN Sports Analytics team. And the Jaguars apparently have good news and bad news. The bad news is they're expected to finish last in the division. The good news is they are projected to finish the season with the most wins that they've had since 2010. This, to me, is ridiculous. And when I go through my game-by-game predictions of wins and losses, I do believe that I will have the Jaguars better than 8-8, which is what the FBI currently has them at. But when you look at the power index rankings that they did, it's like almost every team is 8-8 or 9-7 or 7-9. Every team is mediocre. So how can you possibly put any sort of stock into that type of analysis?
Yeah, no, that's silly. I agree. Jacksonville, I think, is going to be an interesting team. I mean, they have talent, and as much as I dislike their coach, by the way, if you get a chance, take a look at his first press conference from the OTAs. It's pretty funny. He was swearing like a sailor. It was pretty good. They're a talented team. They're going to go as far as Blake Bortles, is able to take them. Fun fact, with Antonio Cromartie getting his current wife pregnant with twins, Cromartie now has more children, either here or on the way, than Blake Bortles has wins in his NFL career.
Oh, that's not even right. Oh, that's brilliant. Two more fun facts about the Jacksonville Jaguars. They are involved in two of the top five predicted worst matchups of the season, that being at Cleveland and at San Francisco. To me, those are both wins for the Jaguars. I don't know why you would look at that as a worst matchup. The Jaguars are going to dominate in those games. The other interesting stat is the Jaguars have a 5.7% chance of earning a wild card playoff spot. That's better than three teams: the Jets, 1.9%, the Browns, 1.2%, and New England, 3.9%. The reason why New England's percentage is so low for a wild card playoff spot is because they have a 96% chance of making the playoffs and a 92.3% chance of winning the AFC East. A weird fun fact. That's how you can make numbers say whatever you want them to say. So I don't put a lot of stock in that. Now we move to the AFC East. Rob, I could choose a headline to throw at you, or I can allow you to just tell me what's going on in Buffalo. You make the decision.
There's not much going on in Buffalo right now. I don't know what the headlines you have are, but for me, the things of note this week was our backup running back, Jonathan Williams, got into a Twitter beef with Nelly somehow. we also learned that Nelly searches for his name on Twitter. So that's what he's up to. Good for him. The Bills are kind of mildly committed to Tyrod Taylor, which I understand they're not committing to really anybody, kind of giving everybody a clean slate. And, yeah, that's really about it. They just had the OTAs. Everyone's worried about Sammy Watkins being a bust, but his numbers are eerily similar to Julio Jones's numbers through the first three seasons of each other's careers.
Well, because of injuries, these are the players that ESPN is saying could be deep fantasy picks for your team. Jonathan Williams, because
I agree.
Because LeSean McCoy isn't reliable. So again, this is because the starters are not that reliable. They get injured a lot. So you're looking at Jonathan Williams, Nick O'Leary at tight end, which I think is also interesting. And
I'm going to say to you right now what everybody in Buffalo always says regarding him. Did you know he's Jack Nicklaus's nephew?
I did not.
No, every time he does anything in a game, that gets mentioned. So it's become a point of contention. So, yeah, he's Jack Nicklaus's nephew.
Brandon Tate at wide receiver. By the way,
no.
If the Buffalo Bills are forced to rely on Jonathan Williams, Nick O'Leary, and Brandon Tate for any long stretch of the season, your team is pretty much in trouble.
I think our team is pretty much in trouble anyway, Pot.
Yeah, that's also true. Oh, the Miami Dolphins have come up on the list. This is a story we've been waiting for. That we're excited to talk about. Apparently, Adam Gase has said that the rookies at training camp will not have logos on their helmet until they earn them. Rob, this is the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard in my life.
Yeah, this is stupid. These are things that coaches do that when they get fired in 3 years, people look back on it and say, are you kidding me? I don't understand how you professional athletes who are getting paid, do you think this is going to be the motivation for your seventh round pick or your undrafted guy, a rookie OTAs that he didn't already have? I mean, I don't know. It's stupid, but whatever. He made the playoffs last year, so good for him.
I will give him credit for trying to do something out of the box to motivate the youngsters, but I don't really think you need to motivate rookies. If there's one group of players in the NFL that you really don't need to find extra motivation for, it's rookies.
Yeah, and you don't need to motivate grown men with stickers.
Yeah. We move now to the AFC West. All right, Patrick Mahomes, who's going to be my favorite punching bag for the next few years, has decided to say that he's not far away from being game ready. Even though he's number three on the depth chart behind Alex Smith and Tyler Bray, he says, I don't know if I'm that far away. I've just got to keep working, keep getting better. These veterans are guys that have been around the league, been in the league, and have been very successful. In order to be like them, I've got to go as hard as I do and catch up to them. This just in, Patrick, you still got a lot of learning to do.
Oh, please let him get into some game action this year. I want that pick to be a top 10 pick. Just KC, lose every game. I want him to lose so bad, I'll be rooting for New England in week one.
Ooh, I like it.
Well, it's all about the draft pick.
I've beaten up that horse enough. I'll move on from Kansas City. Nothing to see in Kansas City. This seems like it's a big story. We have Derek Carr says he won't talk contract extension once training camp begins. In other words, he's going to talk about it all he can right now.
Yep.
I have a feeling this is going to be a story pretty much the entire offseason for the Raiders and Derek Carr. Honestly, I don't know why the Raiders haven't made the move yet. It doesn't seem to make a lot of sense. It seems like Derek Carr is their guy. What are they waiting for?
I mean, he's clearly your guy. You can just pay him, get it over with, you know, extend him, you know, see where you're at, you know, contract, how close you can get, make it happen. And then it's one less thing you have to worry about during the season.
I don't know. Maybe they're waiting for another guy they can take out of retirement that sign to their team.
Do they still hold the rights to Jamarcus Russell?
Yeah, they might. Maybe Jamarcus Russell. Yeah, maybe Jamarcus Russell can come and lead the Las Vegas Raiders of Oakland to a championship. We go to the NFC where we have the Chicago Bears. And the Chicago Bears, well, Mark Sanchez injured his knee and he'll be out until training camp. Apparently the injury was described as minor. They have two other
quarterbacks. When you're a backup quarterback for a bad football team, every injury is minor.
Yeah, that's a good point. In Minnesota, I suppose the biggest news from Minnesota is Teddy Bridgewater, Teddy Two Gloves, is out on the field, still rehabbing from his injuries from last season.
Good. I hope he comes back. He was starting to get a little bit more rounded in his game. I think that if he is to somehow come back from that injury, he'll find a place and he'll play, I think.
I mean, the question is it going to be Bridgewater or Bradford?
That's Bradford for now, but if Bridgewater comes back, he's got to be better than Bradford, I think. Although there's some people that love Bradford. I don't know. I don't see it, but I like Bridgewater coming out. I think it's going to be him. In 2 years, he's going to be the guy there. If not there, somewhere else. He'll be starting in 2 years.
Now in the NFC South, Heath Evans, former Patriot and also former Saint, thinks that the Saints are in for a good year with the Drew Brees, Adrian Peterson combo.
He also, Rex Ryan's first year in Buffalo, predicted the Bills would go 15-1. I'll just leave that right there.
I mean, Adrian Peterson, I think he's a good fit with any team, but I think he was a decent fit here with New Orleans and probably will help that passing game, even though they're without one of their wide receivers.
Yeah, he's a beast, man. And if he's back to, you know, last year he got injured, so you couldn't really say, because he had played, I think, a game and a half, and it wasn't pretty. But that Minnesota offensive line was just in shambles. If he is back to where he was, you know, 2 years ago, you know, that same type of talent level, man, I mean, with a quarterback like that, they have receiving weapons, they have a pretty decent offensive line. It could be New Orleans is always a fun team to watch, obviously. But man, they might be able to do some things. They're actually paying attention to the defense now and adding defensive players.
In Carolina, I think we've been a little unfair to Eddie Lacy out in Seattle, and our joke that he's going to be the starting right guard for the Seattle Seahawks line, although he lost too much weight. Now he can't start on that offensive line. But perhaps Kelvin Benjamin wants to consider being the right guard for the Carolina Panthers, as he was reported in an offseason workouts at 280 pounds. He is listed at 245, so he's already a little big boy, but now he's even bigger.
Yeah, did you see the picture of him at camp? The one that was going around without pads on? He is doughy, I think it's the right word for it. He's gotten a little rotund, for sure.
General manager Dave Gettleman rushed to his defense, saying that his weight, Benjamin's weight, was, quote, much ado about nothing. Right now, he's only 5 pounds off his playing weight. So people want to create news. There's no news. He's a few pounds over. That's all. He'll be fine. He'll stay here in July, and he'll be ready to rock and roll. Oh, so no vacation for Kelvin Benjamin. To the NFC East, the New York Giants are next on the list, and Brandon Marshall seems to be making a strong first impression with the team. You would expect that he would, and especially since Odell Beckham has been MIA from the OTAs, you would have to imagine Brandon Marshall is going to help that wide receiving core get a little bit more mature.
I like him as a fit over there with them. I think it seems like Brandon Marshall seems to do a lot of good for like maybe the first year or so. Then after that, he kind of wears out his welcome. At least that's what it seems like with New York and, into Chicago. I think Miami as well is kind of the same deal. I think all for varying circumstances, but that just seems to be how the story's gone. I think this year, since it's in that honeymoon phase with him, I think it's going to be a real good fit. And man, they have weapons everywhere on offense. They're going to be one of the, if their offensive line can even play together well a little bit and they can get something out of the running back position, they haven't really, I think Paul Perkins is going to be the starter there. And Wayne Gallman will be the second guy. If they can get something out of those guys, man, they're going to have a fun offense.
Moving to Philadelphia, where Carson Wentz is doing his best to keep the students in the Philadelphia area stupid. I don't even understand how a teacher would agree to this deal, but apparently some smart kid convinced his teacher that if Carson Wentz favorited or retweeted his tweet, that they would no longer have to take a final before June 4th. Well, Carson Wentz did just that. He retweeted it on May 31st. And so kids at Westchester Ruston High don't have to take their final. This is absolutely ridiculous. What is going on with the education system in the world today? My kids still have 2 weeks left of school and they're watching freaking movies at school. Like, what am I sending my kids to school for here, Rob? This makes me angry.
Yeah, this stuff didn't happen when you or I were in school. We did, went up to right to the end. This is insane. You're telling me that the whatever district that they're in, the school board is just like casually cool with this? Like, he got retweeted by Carson Wentz. Of course we're not going to have exams. Why would we do that? He did get a retweet.
You know, between old man Neil, our Washington Redskins superfan, who ranted about rain delaying the construction of the Los Angeles stadium, and now old man Soderberg ranting about the education system in America today because an NFL player retweeted a tweet. Like, are you kidding me? Oh, this is what's wrong with America today. This is why we need to be embarrassed.
And even like those things are getting lazy. I can remember seeing on Twitter 6 months ago, someone would have a picture with like their teacher and be like, we don't have to take an exam if we get 20,000 retweets. Now it just takes one retweet by a guy.
Yeah, a second year quarterback in the NFL. All right. We move now to Philadelphia. And by the way, Philadelphia Eagles superfan James was supposed to be on the show. Yeah, that's right. I just outed you, Burrow. Yeah, I just outed you. So we're going to now talk bad about your team because you're... I'm sorry. I'm not even in Philadelphia. I was already in Philadelphia. See, this is what's wrong with the education system today, Rob. We don't even know how to read what's right in front of our face. We're in Washington now. Old man Neil's team, and Josh Norman is apparently putting bulletin board material up already, taking shots at Dez Bryant for one, mentioning that Dez Bryant is, quote, just a guy, which is interesting words.
Just a guy driving 180 miles an hour.
Yeah, apparently. But one might say that Josh Norman is just a guy, frankly.
I think he's just a guy who happens to be really good at zone coverage. I gotta be honest with you, I kind of understood why Carolina did what they did with him regarding him a couple years ago. I don't think he's worth the money, but he does like him some him. He does like getting a little attention from the media. Now's a good, perfect time for it because there's not really much else going on. So Yeah, I mean, you're going to see, I think every offseason you're going to see quotes by him regarding other receivers and things like that that are in his division. He just likes to stir the pot.
Arizona Cardinals, in the midst of their OTAs, they're still being cautious with Carson Palmer, but he has begun offseason throwing. You know, we had mentioned Jamarcus Russell because we're having a conversation about the ranking of the quarterback draft classes. And Drew Stanton was a conversation that we were having. And honestly, I think Drew Stanton has a good chance of playing some quarterback this year.
He may. Carson Palmer is reaching the ghost of Carson Palmer status pretty soon. This might be the year. This might be his last year in the NFL. If I had to guess, I would guess it is.
That, I mean, he is 37. And we know quarterbacks play a lot longer these days. Just go ask Tom Brady. But we shall see with what happens with Carson Palmer. The Seattle Seahawks. Last week, I don't remember if we talked about this on the podcast, but there was a story about how Richard Sherman hasn't let that Super Bowl loss to the New England Patriots go. And is still sort of focusing on the way that Pete Carroll has been, I don't know, I suppose the way that the article is written, you could say coddling his quarterback. What do you think of Seattle this year? Can they get through all this? Are they going to be able to, you know, come together as a team and put forth a winning effort?
They always seem to, don't they? They always seem to just kind of get it together. They got a ton of running backs, and who knows who's going to be the one, you know, to end up playing defensively. I mean, they're at the point now where they got all these guys signed to big contracts, and they don't have the. So that's why, you know, you were hearing Sherman's name, obviously, in the offseason as a potential trade candidate. Obviously, that didn't happen. It's not going to happen, at least this year. I think they do pull it together. They still have good weapons. Doug Baldwin, I think, is a really good receiver. Russell Wilson, I think, has proved his worth in the NFL. He's not a top two or three quarterback, but he's really good. I mean, he's won a Super Bowl. Defensively, they still have really good players on that defense. Earl Thomas will be back. You know, they still got Chancellor, so they still have beast safeties. So, you know, I think, you know, getting those two guys back on the back end, let's see if Sherman has a bounce back year, because he didn't really play all that well towards the end of the year, if I remember correctly. So if he, you know, I think he bounces back a little bit, I think they'll be all right.
Doug Baldwin was asked about the article that was written in the ESPN, the magazine, on the Brock and Salk show at ESPN Seattle. And Doug Baldwin says, I don't know. Honestly, I didn't even read the entire article. I read parts of it, didn't really have time to read the whole thing. And I think that's all we need to say about football players reading articles in magazines. They don't read them.
No.
This is definitely something more that's geared for the fan than for football players. And it's designed because, as you heard in this podcast, we don't have a lot to talk about right now, which is why next week, ladies and gentlemen, we will be presenting you with the division previews. We will go division by division. Every team will get their moment in the sun to talk about their key additions, their key subtractions, key games coming up for this season, all from the view of all 32. All 32 superfans will be on board talking about their teams. And while we don't have superfans at the current moment for the Detroit Lions or Tampa Bay Buccaneers, again, if you'd like to be that superfan, there's still plenty of time. We have not recorded those division previews yet. You can email us, nextfanup@gmail.com. You could even tweet us at NFU Podcast. I've put the call out a few times to get super fans to fill in for those teams. I will make sure that I have some fan that represents those two teams, and it won't be a surrogate super fan filling in. No, no. We'll make sure that we get an actual fan, even if it's on a temporary basis, to represent those two teams for our division previews. But those are going to be starting a week from today. We'll have another show coming up on Sunday. You know, Rob, I've been thinking about this. I keep calling them the Sunday Crew, but that podcast doesn't come out until Monday. Should I be calling them the Monday Crew?
I think it's technically it's the Sunday Crew because that's when they usually record. But yeah, it's getting put out on Monday, so it's the Monday show.
Mm.
So I guess it is the Monday Crew.
The Sunday Monday fun time crew has been doing some excellent podcasts, and if you've been missing them, well, you should be subscribing to us on iTunes, TuneIn, or Stitcher. You know, Alexa loves to play that last episode. Please be sure to do so. And when you do, subscribe to the show and review it. Leave us a review. We'd love to read them here on the podcast. But the Sunday Monday crew, their last show was defending butts of jokes, giving love to the unloved in the NFL, which I thought was rather creative of them, especially since the week before they went out and slaughtered sacred cows.
Yeah, I like it kind of tying both together. You know, something fun to do in the off season, talk about things that, you know, don't normally get mentioned.
Yes, I guess I really stretched it there with Philadelphia. But I mean, seriously, Rob, I mean, if we're going to run away because it's raining and we're going to let kids not take tests because, you know, star quarterbacks are going to retweet tweets, then, you know, we deserve what we get as Americans.
Okay. If retweets are getting you off a test, say we're in shambles. We're a mess right now.
Listen, right now, I want to hear, I will tell you right now, every kid in America that's listening to this podcast, if you get your teacher to agree to this and then you ask me to retweet your tweet, not only am I not going to retweet your tweet, I'm going to reply to that teacher and ask for that teacher's job. That's what I'm going to do. So don't be asking us for retweets. Unless, of course, it's actually something important that you want to talk about, because I do like talking with the fans, Rob. I did just recently. I had a nice conversation with a fan about fantasy football. He wanted to get my opinion on, you know, what rookies do when they're making up their when they're making up their lists for the year. And I was just sort of like, why are you making rankings? There's enough other people out there that are making rankings. To which Tony at Bleed Golden Red said, because I like to base my rankings off my own knowledge rather than just copying others as I've done in the past. My response to him was, well, guess what? That's exactly what you should be doing. You should listen and read multiple opinions and make your own decisions. And also, my advice is friends don't let friends draft Jets, which was the same advice I gave last year, except it was the Browns.
I'm excited about the fact of seeing Christian Hackenberg possibly play NFL football this year. Oh, it's going to be great.
Oh, boy. All right. Before we bash the Jets too much, I'll move off of that. And of course, we want to interact with you. NextFanUp@gmail.com. At NFU Podcast is our Twitter account. You can always reach us on our Facebook page, Facebook.com/NFU Podcast. You can read a few articles that we've got going up. I know Greg is about to pay off a bet from the loss in the AFC Championship game. He had to watch Manchester by the Sea and give a glowing review of said movie, which will be available on our website, nextfanup.wordpress.com. You're not going to want to miss it. I've already read a rough draft. It's quite phenomenal. And awesome. I agree wholeheartedly with everything Greg said about that movie. All right. Thank you, Rob, for joining me on today's show. Thanks to M-Dub, our scout in residence and host of a million other podcasts. I wish I could host a million podcasts. That sounds like fun. But I only host this one, and it's only once a week. And with that, I leave you with Landry Jones. There you have it.
Next week will be next week. Today I'm going to enjoy it. I'm going to go back home and hang out.